This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 98 of the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me, as usual, is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
I say as usual, of course, but we had Will Bentley stepping in last week, but Richard's back for the next two episodes, at least, and we're going to get sort of Will into sort of a bit more sort of regular rotation, hopefully, as well. So this week we have a film I've been looking forward to a lot, which is Prey. We have a very interesting short with an interesting cameo in it called Skywatch. And we're going to round off with a film, as usual, in a DTV throwback. Even though I spent my childhood watching film after film after film, this one seemed to have skipped me by. It is D-War's Dragon War. So let's crack on with our first review. It is Prey. This is from the Netherlands. Came out a couple of years ago, directed by Dick Maas. And it's finally got over here to the UK. When a mysterious predator starts attacking people on the outskirts of Amsterdam, the police bring in Lizzie, a vet from the local zoo, and she correctly surmises that a large lion is responsible for the attacks, but catching the beast is going to prove very difficult and very costly indeed. Now, Rich, we saw the trailer for this quite early on last year. It sort of surfaced, and it's taken ages for this film to come out. It's been one of my... I love sort of creature feature movies, and this, you know, I long suspected this was going to be something that was definitely going to be in my wheelhouse, and oh lordy, it really is. I had the best time with this film, I really did. So, okay, you know, CGI lion aside, I think this film attacks its premise with gusto. Lots of gory deaths, some good dialogue, some good little gags all the way through. Plenty of incident, you know, you could not say you were bored of this film at any one moment at all, and it has some really likable characters.
Yeah, it does follow that nice sort of creature feature format, you know, very well. The Dutch setting's very interesting, you know, it's all set in Amsterdam. The characters are, as you say, engaging. There's the whole sort of relationship drama it's quite light, it's not too heavy, between the main female protagonist, who's the veterinarian, and her boyfriend.
On-off boyfriend,
who's a journalist, or at least a cameraman. He's a cameraman, isn't he, for the team. So they're both involved in this situation from different angles and stuff, and there's a relationship going on. But yeah, it's all about the man-eating lion that's on the loose. And yeah, I mean, this is, it delivered more than I was expecting. It's kind of got it's because of that European setting, it's kind of got a bit of a bland look for some of it, but the horror scenes, you know, and the action sequences, I should say, in some instances, they've really, you know, made a really good job of that. This is from the latest from director Dick Maas, who's one of the biggest name Dutch directors. The last film he did before this is a thriller called Quiz, which was in 2012, which I've been wanting to see for ages, and there's no sign of that one. But the one before that, Sint, which was his Christmas theme movie, is comparable to this, really. You know, they're both sort of very, very Dutch set films, but with that sort of horror element to it.
Yeah, I didn't get on with Sint so much. I know I've seen it, but I can hardly remember a thing about it. You know, whereas this really sort of hit home, and it's a film I'm really looking forward to seeing again, you know. So many really cool little bits in this, like, you know, from a character point of view, the fact that Lizzie gets called in at the beginning is because 6 years previously she had worked with this police detective to bust a ring of smugglers who are smuggling red pandas. And it's just that nice little sort of detail. You know, they haven't just sort of plucked some weirdo out of, you know, from the zoo or something. You know, there is a reason they've sort of brought this woman in. He knows her background in Africa and things like that, which I thought was really nice. There's also an interesting, there's a nice sort of take, very sort of European take on the relationship between Lizzie and Dave, her boyfriend. You know, the fact that he's cheated on her. And she's not sort of exploding in his face about it or anything. She's just sort of ribbing him about it and explaining why he's not getting a second chance so quite so quickly. You know, she's just putting me into like cool mode until she's ready, sort of thing, which I quite liked.
The lion, you said you were sort of hinting there that you didn't think the CGI was that good with the lion.
It's not good.
It's pretty
good. And from the sounds of it, I mean, I was reading something on IMDb where they were saying that to do a CGI lion all the way through the film would have been prohibitively expensive.
Hmm.
Whereas doing sort of, you know, animatronic parts of a lion in close-up and then sort of CGIing the bits they had to. For example, the chase where he's chasing the motorbike courier and when it's on the train. You know, it's not bad CGI. It's just like, you know, it is CGI. I think that's the only difference, really. You know.
Yeah. It is a reasonable mix. You don't see a huge amount of the lion for a fair amount of the running time. They do sort of do the jaws thing and keep it under wraps. And of course,
we get a lot of gory carnage.
They do. I mean, they set the tone right off the bat. You know, there's an element of dark humor, which is constantly recurring.
That first sight gag where the dad goes outside to find his daughter. Oh dear. Every dad's nightmare.
Yeah. And then it's just, you know, the violent, you know, the gory, you know, is gory. And you know, it is quite shocking. I mean, there's my favorite bits are the tram attack, which I thought was brilliant, and it has that nice sort of crash scene at the end, and the playground sequence, which is, you know, just completely breaks the rules on what you're supposed to do in a situation like that. So there's a lot of comedy in it, but it's not too much. You know, there's a sort of the comedy sort of comes in and goes. It's quite interesting. But they introduce the foolish hunter character, and then they bring in the proper hunter character, who's even more sort of, he's better, but he's kind of even more comical in his own way, which funnily enough is a British character played by a British actor. So even though it's in Dutch, a lot of the final act of the movie is in English. So
it's interesting because a character played by Mark Frost who comes in and you know, had a previous relationship with Lizzie, and when he arrives, she switches to English, but it's English with a proper accent.
Yeah.
You know, it's not English with a Dutch accent as you'd expect. You know, she it's really weird. She just doesn't have a Dutch accent. I don't know if she was dubbed, you know, but.
Not from what I could tell. It looked pretty natural.
Yeah, exactly. Which was really interesting, you know, the fact that her English is so good, she doesn't even have a Dutch accent in English. I will say
we're reviewing the Dutch language subtitled version. There is a dubbed version, dubbed into English version. And as far as we know, both are, as of this recording, supposed to be available on the DVD.
Yeah,
whether that is ultimately how it comes out, we don't know. But we can't judge the dubbed version.
I'll let you know when I get my copy because I've got it on order. It's that good as far as I'm concerned. I just really really enjoyed this. You know, I enjoyed Mark Frost's performance. The fact, you know, after the foolish hunter when he comes in and you think, yeah, this guy's talking sense. He knows what he's talking about. You know, and the little detail, the fact that he's lost a leg to a lion, you know, he's the best that they've got, and he's lost a leg to a lion, sort of thing. Yeah. You know, it's like it sort of shows you the sort of precarious position that they're actually in, which I thought was really really good as well.
Oh, there was another bit in there that it's basically I don't know if it's sort of a nod to it, but you know, the whole aliens Predator 2 kind of sending in the team, and they just get taken out like really quickly. Kind of sequence,
but from the, sort of the worst, yeah, for the, by the worst reason, almost, you know, sort of the road to hell is paved with good intentions kind of thing. But yeah, that was quite funny and sort of blackly comic.
Yeah.
The really farcical bit I enjoyed was the three golfers. Mm-hmm. Early on, where these three guys who are like partners in a firm, and two of them are fed up with the other guy and are going to sack him, you know, going to break away. And so one of them follows this guy into the bushes where he's lost his ball to break the news. And of course, the lion attacks, and the guy who's supposed to be being sacked comes out covered in the other guy's blood. And it's the other guy, oh my God, what have you done to him? I just thought it was really, really funny. But yeah, that's my humour at least. It's just a delight, really, from my point of view. You know, if you like sort of creature features, this is the sort of pretty much top of its game. It's funny, it's exciting, it's got some gore, it's got some shocking deaths to it. You know, there's definitely people that, you know, if this was a Hollywood movie, probably wouldn't have died and would have gotten away at the last minute or something. But
you get a big satisfying climax with sort of a two-part sort of climax in the usual sort of tradition, with a little bit of a twist element and
good at epilogue sort of climax thing going on.
I haven't actually seen one of I don't think I've seen one of Dick Master's films since the two that he made in English, the sort of faux Hollywood. I think they were shot in the Netherlands largely, but they hired actors like William Hurt and Jennifer Tilly and Naomi Watts and stuff. Mm. Did you ever see those? One of them was Down, which was a remake of his film The Lift from the 80s.
I haven't, no. There was a nod to it in the film, wasn't there, I think, where I think one of the policemen says, oh, no, it was Dave the cameraman goes, I had to go and cover this thing, it was two people stuck in a lift or something.
Down's good, it's worth seeing, but it's really odd that it's really heavy on F-words. It's like uncomfortably so, it feels really weird and forced that they're swearing so much. But the other one was Do Not Disturb with William Hurt and Jennifer Tilly and I think Dennis Leary and Michael Chiklis as well. But that's set in Amsterdam, but it's all English characters. But I didn't think that was as good. But his films do have that style and humour. I'd really love to go back and see Amsterdam. That's like that's probably his most famous one. I've never seen that. But I thought this was, you know, one of the best films I've seen, you know, one of the best creature feature kind of movies I've seen for quite a while. So I definitely recommend it. That's an 8 out of 10 from me.
Well, I'm going to go one higher because for pure entertainment value, I think this is absolutely superb. I'm really looking forward to getting the DVD and watching this with my wife because I know she's going to enjoy it too. So this gets an 8 and a 9 out of 10 for Prey. Our short shot this week is Skywatch. Set in the near future, a company called Nexport has developed the latest essential household product, where drones transport your products Star Trek style directly into your home. In an apartment tower block, two young teens hack into the Nexport system as a prank, switching people's order. For example, they give a vegan a Big Mac, and the fat slob who had ordered the Big Mac gets her veggie smoothie instead. However, their prank leads to discovering a deadly secret hidden in the Nexport drone's programming. This is an awesome 10-minute short. It really is. It's a proof of concept kind of thing, looking to, you know, sort of develop further. They've very cannily managed to get hold of Jude Law to step in for a last-minute cameo. There's a really good 8-minute short following this, or linked to this, where the director explains how he managed to get Jude Law involved. But nevertheless, you know, so the rest of the film is done so well. The opening scene of this, which explains what Nexport is in a sort of as an advert, is so well done. I thought I was actually watching an advert before the film started. You know, I thought, oh, is this the what? You know, and the product itself is really, really canny. You know, I mean, you know, Netflix at the moment already has, sorry, Netflix, Amazon already has its drones, you know, sort of delivering products in certain places. You know, and this is kind of the next step from there where, yeah, they'll sort of send you, they'll hover over the, your tower block and there's a receiver and they'll actually sort of transport your goods into this sort of cubicle. Which is built inside your apartment. It's a really, really well developed concept, and you know the story itself actually manages to be pretty exciting as well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's full on sort of blockbuster level quality. You know, say 10 minutes short. We've got Uriah Shelton, who we watched in Enter the Warrior's Gate.
Oh yeah.
Way back, that was a couple of years ago that he did that. So he's the lead guy here. Now, what this is basically is War Games. Mm. It's like a variation on the same theme. You know, we had War Games, the Dead Code or whatever it was, the sort of War Games sequel that came back a while. But you know, if you're looking at a new War Games for new generation, this is it. I think it's got that same sort of, you know, hacker character. Gets in over his head, accidentally triggers like a major incident, it's all to do with, you know, hacking and stuff. And you've got the system, the drones are incredibly well realized with the visual effects and the whole incorporation of Jude Law, which is a real it's a shame that when the, you know, in the searches, they have to put Jude Law's name in the film's description so that people click on it, you know, so they get the interest. That's the whole point. But that is kind of a real nice treat when you get to it, because that's like a sort of a bit of a payoff. But what an amazing thing, you know, in terms of getting people to notice this film and take it to that next level, to have that involvement, to have that endorsement, to have that interest. More people will see it because of that.
Yeah, I'm assuming you did watch the... his 8-minute thing, so how to get a famous actor into your shot.
Made the whole film and left a bit for Jude Law, which just this final seamlessly scene, added it in. Yeah.
Which and what that 8-minute short showed, I mean, you know, they got the director, what was his name?
Colin Levy.
Colin Levy, yeah. He's actually really funny as well. The short of him sort of like trying to write an email back to Jude Law and having to write, "Hey Jude, oh no, they can't write that," you know, all this sort of stuff. He's actually sort of pretty funny in his own right. But what that short showed, that it was basically a making of the film. Yeah. And everything was green screened. Mm. You know, even the tower block was CGI. And I was like, well, that's you know, that's a brilliant effect, because you don't even realise it's an effect. You know, that's how good it is. You know, they were able to sort of fabricate the whole area, which I thought was absolutely superb. And you know, if the guy couldn't get Jude Law, you know, if he tried, couldn't get him, he could have got any actor to do that line, and the film would have still worked.
Yeah, you don't need that big star, you know, moment, but I think it's called almost an endorsement or a nice payoff kind of moment, but it's really it's inconsequential to the film. But in terms of what you think that's going to mean for the project, I think it says a lot. And you know, that I think that this is all, you know, the first film that I thought of when I watched this was Code 8. You know, and it took a couple of years, and Code 8 went from I don't know how many years it was, but it went from that short that we reviewed, and you know, now it's out and it's on you know, Google and everything, to, you know, the full length feature, which we haven't had a chance to look at, but
not yet.
You know, we loved the short, didn't we? And I think we feel the same way about this one.
Yeah, absolutely. What was his name? Colin Levy. He used to work for Pixar, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure in what sort of capacity.
He's done all sorts of visual effects. He's been like a layout artist on Finding Dory and Good Dinosaur, Inside Out. He's directed several other shorts as well previously, which I'm now going to try and check out, obviously.
You know, I mean, that scene, you know, he basically flew to London to shoot that scene with Jude Law. And the setup that he's got, you know, with the cameras and the tracking and everything and the green screen, you know, it wasn't sort of like some guy turning up with his little, you know, filming on his phone or something. This is a sort of serious, sort of professional shoot that he was doing. And, you know, it just looked really, really good. Our DTV throwback this week is D-War, Dragon Wars. A princess and her protector are reincarnated 500 years into the present and must find each other and complete their destiny to stop an evil dragon from unleashing hell on Earth. This one had passed me by. I think I remember seeing the trailer at some point, which had some pretty striking special effects work in it. This is a Korean film, sort of Korean / US hybrid, I believe.
Well, it's a Korean movie, yeah. Like almost pretty much through and through. I don't think there was any American financing whatsoever, but it's right. Made in the style of a Hollywood movie.
Really?
So it's all in English.
Okay, it's shot in English, and the three main principles are American / English, I guess.
Yeah. Set in America, big American special effects, all that sort of stuff.
There are some very striking moments in this, you know, sort of the sort of dinosaur creatures with like rocket packs, sort of missile packs attached to their backs and sort of firing down the streets of Los Angeles. And
the Star Wars bit.
All that sort of stuff is really cool. But I didn't get on with this very well at all, I must admit.
Most people don't.
I don't know. I can't see myself giving it a second chance. But having said that, I think for probably about three quarters of the film, it's watchable. There's some good stuff happening throughout. It's just when you get to the end of it and it slips into that other sort of demon dimension or something, and everything is just sort of very murky, and you've got two giant dragons who basically look the same, sort of entwined and fighting each other. It's like, okay. It reminded me of the ending of The Incredible Hulk, the Edward Norton one.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying.
Which was great up to a point, and then you just have two CGI monsters just hitting each other. You know, and it just sort of takes out any peril, really, any danger. Sort of, you know, it just drops out of the equation, basically.
Well, the thing, jumping ahead, so I'd say, because we jumped ahead to that in that last bit, it's kind of, you don't really know what's happened there. It's, you know, 1 minute they're driving along the roads in America, and it's like, where did this big, like, castle and stuff, or whatever, you know, monolith, kind of come from? Have they you took it as like they've transferred to another realm, but they never make that clear, do they? So where are they? Is this like somewhere in the Midwest or something that they just kept it hidden? But yeah, it's quite a curious movie. The thing from the outset that I have to mention is the title that they went with for international, not just in the UK, was Dragon Wars. And are there any dragon wars in it, really? Not really. There's like a little bit of a dragon fight at the very end.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the movie, there's not even a dragon, it's a snake. It's snake wars, really. It's about becoming.
It evolves into
a dragon.
It's about
becoming a dragon, yeah. So there's no actual dragon wars in it. It's a snake war. It's a snake on the loose. It's a killer snake movie running around, snake monster. And then at the end of the film, it's good snake versus bad snake, and then one of them gets to be a celestial dragon. So the title is a complete misnomer, really.
Yeah, and the fact that you mentioned celestial dragon, because we're talking sort of like oriental-style dragons here, which are sort of very long, snake-like with tiny arms and legs, you know, rather than sort of like...
No wings.
No wings. No
wings.
But can fly anyway.
Yeah, they just sort of... you know, do that sort of wibbly wobbly thing and sort of moving up through the sky. So this is it's Korean in origin, and it's got the whole, you know, the Korean history element, the sort of fantastical flashbacks sequence, and then it for no reason other than for the movie, the reincarnation is in the United States.
Yeah.
So all these Koreans are reincarnated as Caucasians
yeah.
in the United States,
including the sort of the you know, the font of all knowledge. It becomes Robert Forster.
Forster, yeah.
which is really weird. And there's a very strange bit, sort of in the first third of the movie, where we end up in a flashback within a flashback.
Ah, there's a flashback within a flashback within a flashback.
Yeah, yeah. It just keeps sort of going. Yeah, because it goes back to his childhood, and then it goes back to ancient times. And then yeah. it goes back even further to sort of explain a bit more about the mythos, so which was just really, really bizarre, you know, sort of going that far. It was almost Inception-like yeah. in its intricacy by that point.
It's got a huge amount of exposition in the first part. This is less than an hour and a half in this cut of the film that we've actually got. The, you know, it's,
you mean there's
it's,
a longer version?
There probably is, I don't know, but that's what we ended up with. Is, yeah. Sort of, I don't know if there is a longer version, but you know, there might have been in Korea, I don't know. The they're trying to pack a huge amount of mythos and stuff in there. It's easy to get quite lost. Basically, there's a girl with a dragon tattoo, literally.
Literally.
Or yeah. as a birthmark. Hmm. And she is the reincarnation of like a princess, actually. I think she literally is a princess. And then there's the Protector, who is reincarnated as
Jason Bear
as a journalist, who seems to be able to get into everywhere like really easily. It's like nobody's yeah. allowed in, but he just goes, oh, yeah, I'm a journalist. And he just walks in and just sort of starts hanging around and stuff. But, you know, the production values are great. This is directed by a guy called Hyung-Rae Shim, I think if I'm pronouncing that right, who was a comic actor in Korea, who decided that he wanted to make creature features. So he did a trial run movie called Yongari, which was a remake of, I think, a 60s Godzilla knockoff. That was a fully CGI creature running around in, you know, with American characters. Everyone's speaking English and stuff. So that was the dry run, but a much lower budget production with terrible CGI.
Mm.
So and that wasn't a success. So even though that wasn't a success, he still managed to get multiple times the budget to be able to have another go with another concept. And this is an infinitely better film than that other one was, but it still has its flaws. But I really like it. I mean, I cannot fault the ambition of the guy. And when you watch there's a making of little thing where the director's talking quite passionately about what he was trying to do and trying to achieve. And I definitely feel the heart was in the right place with this. You know, he felt so proud that what they'd managed to pull off. You know, getting a Korean film made that was of a Hollywood standard that would play widely and be released internationally. Say despite the special effects, they managed to get Steve Jablonski, who'd just done Transformers, to do the soundtrack. Mm. The visual effects are pretty amazing. There's the whole there's like what we were saying about the army, the like Clone Warsy kind of or Star yeah. no not even Star Wars, more like Phantom Menace kind of war scene where they all come into the city and they're just blowing up helicopters and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
that's,
I enjoyed that. That was really
cool. that is the best part of the film.
Yeah.
It really isn't necessary. No. It doesn't really actually play any part. And the snake is just sort of attacking. And
it's like why are they there? You know, it doesn't even make sense in the story.
No, but the snake just could easily get them. And it just, and you know, because it's a movie, they have to keep getting away. And there's a whole kind of the snakes chasing after them while they're in the car. And it's a bit like that scene a few years later in 2012 with John Cusack in his limousine, you know, and the roads all crumbling behind him and that. But he still just about manages to get away. You know, it's just the whole impossibility of it. But it is quite fun. And say it's a very brisk view. The yeah. And I say I love the snake visual effects. I can't remember the Imugi. That's what they're called, isn't it? The Imugi. I can't remember what the bad Imugi was called, because it seemed like the good one didn't have a name, but the bad one did.
Yeah.
So the bad one was the one they were talking about all the time, and the good one just sort of stayed out of the way. didn't really get involved.
It didn't really until the end. Yeah. And then there's another weird bit where the dragon basically is this sorcerer kind of guy who sort of turns up. And do you think he's going to be a foil to Robert Forster's character? And he turns up at Robert Forster's antiques shop when he's not there. And he sort of confronts Jason Baer's character. And nothing happens. It's just really a bit weird. There's almost as if they've sort of written themselves into a corner. It's like, aha, now I've got... I don't know what to do with you. just cut to a different scene. We'll forget this bit even happened. It's bizarre.
That's what I say. I think there were bits. There's probably other bits of the film that have, you know, been sort of sacrificed over for whatever reason. The Baraki, I think, is the bad. What the snake's called. But the film. Now, this is what I thought was quite interesting of putting this and Prey together in the same episode. This is what when I was looking at them, I was watching this, and do you know the Wilhelm scream?
Yes.
So there's two Wilhelm screams in this movie. And then when I was watching Prey, I realised there were two Wilhelm screams in that one as well.
That's weird.
So like, in two different points of the movie, I was just like, whoa, what are the chances? I was like, watching these two creature features around the same time. And they've both, not only both got the Wilhelm scream, but they've both got it twice. Yeah. It's a lovely little thing that you can never quite tell sometimes whether they've included it as a nod, you know, sort of a knowing thing,
yeah,
or they've just included it because that is the famous sound effect that, you know, is on file and the reason why it's been for everything. But you know, it's always quite fun to hear it. It's always all over the place. So yeah, I saw this movie when it first came out. I had it on import. I did buy it recently, but I think I might have the original imported copy lying around somewhere I've forgotten about. But I enjoyed it then. I enjoyed it now. As flawed as it is, I think it's a real shame that Heung Ray Shim didn't get to do another one. I would have liked to have seen him take it to an even more, because apparently he was going to do one called Fish Wars after this. And obviously because this was a big bomb, that didn't happen, but he has continued making films of different types.
Well, IMDb has D-War Mysteries of the Dragon in sort of development hell. so this says the new film will be set in 1969 and depict a fictional war between the US and Russia as they race to land the first person on the moon. Mm-hmm. Okay, how are they going to tie dragons into that, or God knows?
Well, that's what I mean. This one didn't even have dragons, really. That's so true. It's like, it's just complete. Yeah.
Maybe it's just a sort of bad sort of translation of D, whatever D stands for in Korea.
I'm amazed you hadn't come across this film like properly.
I'm aware of its existence, obviously. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I was just all Godzilla'd out when it came out.
That's true. You know, there was so many of these kind of movies out around that time.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer and everything, being quite impressed with sort of special effects work, but. Excuse me. It just sort of passed me by. So, in fact, the version I saw of this is the Riff Tracks version.
What, Dragon Wars?
Yeah.
There's a Riff Tracks version? I didn't even know.
Yeah, there is a Riff Tracks version.
Explain that to me. How does that work?
Well, it's the film.
Yeah.
But you know, sort of characters like Mike Nelson and the other guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000. They just sort of like over the top sort of dub their sort of snarky comments.
Uh-huh.
It did help it go past a bit quicker. where can we find this, Richard? I mean, this is on Amazon?
I think, I'm not sure. Where did you get the Riff Tracks version? Is that else?
I got that elsewhere.
Elsewhere, okay.
Yeah, there's some Riff Tracks available on...
I know there's some on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this one is or not.
Well, I think you can get this on VOD or whatever. I picked it up in CEX.
You said you picked it up in £1 or something.
Yeah, 50p.
50p?
Yeah, 50p. So,
it's definitely money worth spent.
Yeah, it's definitely worth 50p, I'd say.
Absolutely. So, if you haven't seen this already, it's definitely worth having a look. You know, have a bit of a snark over it. There are some good special effects sequences in it. Don't take it too seriously. Just enjoy it for what it is. Okay, so that's the end of this particular episode. Hope you enjoyed our ramblings on. Do check out the films we mentioned. All the trailers will be linked into the footnotes. And tune in to our next episode. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.